Thank you, Janet, and thank you to the Freeze family for this wonderful continuing honor in recognizing public health leaders, and I can't think of a more deserving winner, award winner, than my friend and colleague Jonathan Fielding. In fact, I would argue that maybe Jonathan should get the award 2 years in a row for all that he's done. You could give him the award for his public health leadership practice and scholarship, and then next year give it to him for his family's extraordinary philanthropic support of UCLA and its public health future. So again, a round of applause for Jonathan and his family. Let me do this. Jonathan and I did not talk about each other's presentation before this session. There is so much of what he covered in my stuff that I'm going to blast through this right kind of to the punchline. But it just shows that brilliant leaders think alike, Jonathan. And this is, I want to lift up the moment here. And the moment is the following. You know, it may seem like this far-off, impractical, untouchable vision that Jonathan laid out. I would submit to you that the next 2 to 3 years represent the best moment in about a 75-year window for us to begin to get within a stone's throw of the kind of vision that Jonathan laid out. And if we blow the next three-year moment, it may be another half century before we have an opportunity like this. You know, for us, the California Endowment, we have a Building Healthy Communities plan that is about place and neighborhood and community, all the things that Jonathan talked about. And we also have the Affordable Care Act in front of us. So we see, at least our prescription for Healthy America is very much in line from the standpoint of a private foundation, what Jonathan described. You got to get at the 70% that has nothing to do with health and healthcare, and that's through the healthy community work in place, but you've got to get at the healthcare and use the lever of the Affordable Care Act to fix the healthcare delivery system to make it more prevention and wellness and primary care oriented. And so that's how we're going to get at the issue of health equity in this country. Jonathan talked about this. Where you live matters a lot. Does your zip code matter more than your genetic code? The answer to that is a resounding yes, based on Jonathan's presentation. And that's why you've been seeing our Health Happens Here ads and on our zip code ads here on display at the American Public Health Association meetings. Our community partners, there are 14 of them across the state of California, picking 14 low-income distressed neighborhoods to try and create a better, smarter healthcare delivery system, a public health model for patients like Maria and their families. We focus more on young people, but the campaign here is that the Building Healthy Communities is a 10-year plan approved by the Board of Directors of the California Endowment. Health Happens Here is our campaign. And it's simple. It's a way for us. We needed to decode and break down and make a little bit more user-friendly and a little bit more accessible the social determinants of health language, which is really clumsy language. Issues like health equity and health disparities and the social determinants of health are mother's milk for those of us in public health, but it's terrible language, terribly accessible language for the public. And so this very simple three-word expression, Health Happens Here, was inspired by the communities that we work with. Jonathan talked about this. I won't repeat this issue, but let me try and fast forward to let me just go back one slide. So our 10-year campaign, it's a billion-dollar 10-year campaign across the state. We're at the end of year two in these 14 communities. We've broken down into three sub-campaigns: Health Happens in Neighborhoods, some of the local environmental issues that Jonathan brought up. Health Happens in Schools, you talked about the nexus between health and education. Health Happens with Prevention and the execution implementation of the Affordable Care Act. And you can go to our website at www.calendow.org to learn more. We have 10 outcomes. The Affordable Care Act clearly, which wasn't in our strategic plan. It just was a wonderful thing that happened, thanks to the leadership of this president and the Congress, and this law was passed. I'm not sure why people are not looking at it as a law that's in force. It is passed, and so we're moving ahead. But certainly it helps us address the issue. And this is the timeline I'm talking about. If you go back about 50 years to the most significant health policy change in this country, you go to Medicare and Medicaid, then you had Healthy Families somewhere in the middle there, which was an important move forward. Now we have the Affordable Care Act, and given the body blows and the bruises that this president has undergone in getting this very reasonable and practical health reform law through, what president in their right mind would try to do this again in the next 20 years? Okay, so that's why I'm looking at this not just as a retrospective once in a 50-year shot, but a once in a 75-year shot for us to get the kind of vision that Jonathan described in this presentation. This is why, certainly at our foundation, we see this as a critical, critical moment. The other hat I'll wear, and I'll shift quickly to that, is I'm also the five-member board member of the Health Benefit Exchange. Are responsible for executing and implementing Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act here in the state of California, the vision and mission of the exchange, and I just want to point out a couple of phrases that I think Jonathan would be happy to see. Certainly to increase the number of insured Californians and improve healthcare quality and lower costs, but also, and this language is important, reduce health disparities through an innovative, competitive marketplace that empowers consumers to choose a health plan and providers that give them the best value. And secondly, in our value statement, you'll see in results, it says the impact of the exchange will be measured by its contributions to expanding coverage and access and improving healthcare quality, promoting better health and health equity, and lowering costs for our Californians. Now, this language just didn't come out from the Ten Commandments. Okay? When Jonathan talks about voice and advocacy and showing up, that's how this language got into the health exchange language. Okay? And yes, I'm one of five member board, but I'm just one vote. So of course, I talked about the role of the exchange, Jonathan, in trying to get at issues of health equity and disparities, and to think about a healthcare system that's designed around folks like Maria. Right? The reason why this language got in was because in the early meetings of the California Health Exchange Board, we had testimony from not only public health advocates, but community advocates and grassroots organizations and members from ethnic organizations like the California Black Health Network, the California Latino for a Healthier Coalition, Healthier California, the Asian Pacific Islander groups, the gay, lesbian, and transgender groups, all coming up and saying to the exchange, we want this to be about equity. That's how this language got in there. Voice matters and showing up matters. If any message I can have you take back to your states, and I know most states don't have an exchange, but if you're in a state that does have an exchange board, it's been too quiet, even here in California, hearing from public health advocates around the roles that the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, which all of its wonderful value in terms of wellness and prevention, and I won't go through all of those, but it is really quite a pivot to begin to help turn and transform our healthcare system into a sickness non-system, into a wellness system that is more effective. So please, if you're going to stay with the Health Exchange Board, show up, get on the agenda, send letters to Exchange Board members, find out who they are, get in their head about this as a public health opportunity to move the agenda forward. We've got major issues at the California Health Benefit Exchange right now. It is a startup. We are trying to figure out a way to ensure 5 million of the 7 million uninsured Californians who can benefit from the advantages of the Affordable Care Act, roughly half of them through Medicaid expansion, roughly the other half through subsidies. The numbers are not exactly there, but close enough. And these are the dozen things that are right now in front of us at the Health Exchange that we've got to get done between now and October 2013, or at the latest, January 2014. And so we're moving really fast. And the reason why I'm making this point of getting the slide up is that there's a lot on our plate as a health exchange to get California ready and this nation ready for health reform But you've got to get in the face and the eyes and the ears of the five-member boards that are running these exchanges. So please, that's my final plea to you, is affirming Jonathan's comment about voice and advocacy and presence, because this is not one of those things where it's just data-driven. We would love it if we lived in a data-driven world. You've got to be able to assert voice. You've got to be able to assert political advocacy. This is I'm not going to get into this. This is the craziness around enrollment and outreach. But let me just end on this. The opportunity for execution implementation of the Affordable Care Act is that the state exchanges, for all of the criticism of the Affordable Care Act as a big government socialist takeover, which is a caricature that is wholly and completely inaccurate. The Affordable Care Act allows the states to create exchanges to move and pivot the healthcare system in the right kind of direction. And this comes from work from our colleagues at the California Healthcare Foundation. You know, what are the possible roles that a health exchange could play? It could be a price leader. It could be a change agent in terms of the healthcare delivery. For example, health homes, patient-centered medical homes. A phenomenal way that patients like Maria can get the kinds of connectedness to the services that he or she needs to be a truly healthier individual. It can be a public partner, and it can be a service center in terms of outreach and enrollment and giving people kind of services they need to provide the best coverage. So these are all the wonderful things that the local Massachusetts Health Connector is already there in many ways. And so my final plea, as you return back to your state, find out what your local health exchange, your state health exchange is doing. If you live in a state that doesn't have one for political reasons or otherwise, let's see what happens after the election, but you can also begin to articulate to the federal agencies about the roles and the possibilities for prevention. So this is the promise and the challenge of the Affordable Care Act and its execution to bring public health and medicine together for the first time and transform a sickness system into a wellness system, emphasis on primary care and prevention, clinical integration, payment system reform, coverage changes, and certainly there's health profession support in the Affordable Care Act as well. Community transformation grants, which have been a wonderful way to get at the kinds of issues that Jonathan talked about, no-cost preventive services, essential health benefits, and primary care clinic grants. Health homes, ACOs, so again, a huge opportunity to pivot. I think this law has been the most unfair caricature and politically assassinated and torpedoed legislation this country has ever seen. In my view, I suppose there's no such thing as a perfect health reform legislation, because your idea of perfect may not be my idea of perfect, but this is about as good as this country is going to be able to get. And when I hear talk about repeal and replace, I find it unfathomable that we're going to be able to replace the Affordable Care Act with something that is as meaningfully thought out and well thought out as the Affordable Care Act. So I'm not paid. I'm not an employee of the Obama administration. I do not make those comments actually in any partisan way. It is a piece of legislation that has Republican ideas and conservative ideas, as well as progressive ideas, and I think there's a far more centrist and middle of the road approach that this country needs to cross the bridge from an expensive sickness system to a wellness system. So with that, I'm going to stop. If you want to find out more about the health exchange and our work on this in California, there's the website. I can't stay around for questions. I apologize. I've got to try and break through the parade to get to a flight. But I'll close by saying thank you to the Freeze family for choosing this magnificent and extraordinary public health leader. Congratulations, Jonathan, and I'll see you for dinner.
Thanks. Well, that was a treat, as promised. I'm going to ask Jonathan to come to the microphone and We have 10 or 12 minutes for comments, questions, and opportunity to interact with Dr. Fieldy.
Anybody have a comment, question?
Making our way.
Please, there's a microphone there in the middle of the room.
Dr. Jonathan Ross, I'm past president of Physicians for National Health Program, so you know where I'm coming from. I'll ask you a simple question, which is, you point out the investments that we can create in a better health for the country from the waste that's in the current system. As a capacity of Physicians for National Health Program, our leaders will be for their $400 million in administrative waste that will come after this approach and improve and extend the Medicare for all. In the absence of that, how do you jumpstart the investments? Every dollar spent is someone's income. The forces begin to change and taking money out of other people's pockets. So, where would you start in the absence of a true reform like the improved standard of care for all? Where would you strategically jumpstart investment dollars that's happening in these cities?
Well, that's a great question, and I think the issue is that this is silent. This issue is not on anybody's radar. The issue on the radar is always, oh, you want to cut, oh, you know, is this government cutting? This is a nanny state, as Bob so nicely described. You know, we have to get, and anything you want to do that changes anything is rationing. You know, that's the R word, and that's a political minefield. We need to have a countervailing force of folks in public health and in with the other sectors saying, look at the opportunity cost. And it's not just the opportunity cost to make progress in those other sectors, to have better agriculture or to have better housing. It's because there are substantial dividends in terms of health that are going to accrue from those alternative investments. So we need to make it both a health issue as well as an issue from investment in other sectors. And I don't think that there is public appreciation of that, nor is there appreciation of that opportunity cost on the part of policymakers. So I think getting the coalition together and starting to make that argument to policymakers by saying, look, we're not here to tell you to cut this or to cut that. We are telling you that we can't afford the opportunity cost that we currently have. And here's some really very high return investments. And by the way, the Affordable Care Act starts in some of those ways by putting money, for example, into the Nurse Family Partnership. So, you know, we have kind of some small footprints on the ground, but not nearly enough. Yes?
I come from a community-based social services program in the University of Zurich. And the question that I have is that when I come to this conference, there is a wealth of information. A lot of it is technical, it's things that I understand. Many of us understand. And my challenge is, when I go back to the community, I want to have a way to translate and share the information and be able to get the ordinary person who is at risk to understand why it is they need to get involved at some level to start either engaging in their own changes or pushing the positive. The challenge is that there's funding to help that translation of technical information into lay information into there. And I wonder if my idea is about how we can bridge that gap. Because from my perspective, when you get the ordinary citizens who live in the community understand why the zip code where they live is very important, this is more quality. As long as they understand it, but we don't have enough ground force to translate nor resources to translate that information.
Thank you. Very apt comment and very timely. But you know, what I find is that when I give that patient, Maria, a profile to people in the community, they get it right away. They understand that. They know. They know inherently. They know from their own local experience with their own families and their own neighbors and their own friends that you don't get quality of life
unless you invest in these other areas. They understand the deficits, they understand what has to be done, but they haven't come together as a political force. Our voices haven't been in unison. They haven't been loud enough. We haven't been talking the same language to the policymakers. We haven't translated into language they understand. We haven't always used the best evidence in saying what we think can work. I think that's what we take. That's why this needs to be a movement. It has to be bottom-up as well as top-down. If folks like me are the only ones talking about it, it's a sure loser. Dr. Horton?
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And congratulations to the priests, people, and their Honorable Sister Wise selection, and also in bringing two of the nation's premier public health leaders, Bob Ross and Jonathan, together for the diocese.
And if everybody doesn't know, Mark is the former director of the California Department of Public Health, and a distinguished public health leader.
But Jonathan, I have a challenge for you. I'm sorry Bob had to leave, but it's nice to see the complementarity of your comments here to Bob Ross. But in many ways, you know, I see a very different vision as to how to invest in the future. Your presentation primarily gave us prescription for relatively traditional public health approach to investment in evidence-based public health interventions. I was at a very eloquent presentation yesterday by Tony Eichner where he laid out, you know, the California and Dallas decision on their $1 billion investment in working communities moving forward, and it's all about community empowerment. You know, Jonathan, do you see these as two conflicting visions, or how do you see bringing those two visions together? Here's a vision for $1 billion investment in community empowerment, and here's billions of dollars of investments in relatively top-down, evidence-based public health interventions affecting communities. How do you bring those two visions together?
I think they meld well. I think that if you look at the community, the question is, what's the community going to do? It's not simply empowerment, it's just this abstraction. Empowerment means you're going to do some things, you're going to invest in some things. And my feeling is it's important to give communities the opportunity to understand what we already know can work. Because there's nothing worse than having a community that invests in things we already know doesn't work. Isn't going to give them the kind of improvement they expect. So I believe in community empowerment, and I'm not suggesting that these national programs, that there shouldn't be choice locally, and locals shouldn't be involved in deciding what works for them. They should. But we need to have this investment stream available. I mean, not everybody is, you know, there are 14 communities for the California Endowment. We're doing the first five. LA is also investing in a number of communities. It's not the whole country. It's not the whole state. And we need to find some things that will help a lot more, higher percentage of the population. So we need to translate some of what we're learning in those intensive efforts into a broader reach to make them scalable. And when you talk about scalability, that's when the top and bottom come together. You might want to put that microphone down just a little bit. Thank you. A little, speak up, please.
Congratulations. I have a quick question. Maybe you can talk about the importance of not just in the speech, but the movement. And I just wondered what your thoughts are about APHP as an organization, what it has been doing to contribute to this movement, and what it could be doing better.
Well, I don't know all the things that APHA is doing, but I've always been impressed with the range. I think the APHA has a real benefit in the breadth of its membership. So if you look at all the parts of the membership being represented, there are very good ties to other parts of the community. And I think if we take full advantage of those, APHA could be an important mobilizing force. How this is going to compare to other priorities, I don't know. But from where I sit, this is the greatest opportunity we have if we're really trying to improve the quality of life. At the same time, improve our competitiveness, improve standard of living, you know, basically get America back on track. So I would put this very high, but I understand that there's a a significant process within APHA for deciding that. And not only that, but I'm not sure if you took a poll of APHA members, what percentage would say, you know, had kind of been exposed to this kind of an approach and would agree with it. So part of, I think, the opportunity for APHA is to teach others and to have some effort to try and make this general approach be accessible and see what members think about it. I would hope members would be very supportive despite their very different disciplines.
Last question.
Congratulations.
But I'm not the last question.
Could you take just a minute to talk about how we can work on the issue of bringing medicine and public health together, and particularly through how we're training our next generation of physicians and nurses and dentists and public health folks to have a common agenda?
You know, and that's a wonderful last question, and I'm glad that I don't have time to answer. No, I'm just, this is too hard. We've been working to try and integrate primary care and public health, medicine in general and public health, and I would hope that the accountable care organizations provide at least some of the right incentives for folks to come together in ways they haven't before. But it is true that the perceptions of what's important, the way that one views the world, continue to be significantly different. In some ways, you know, it's by profession, and all the incentives are to focus on the clinical side. So you have to. This notion of a health home, I think, is an important one. When we can show that there are dollar benefits to the combined organizations by working more closely together, we're going to get there a lot quicker. If it has to be against the incentives, I don't think it's going to happen. So my hope is that the accountable care organizations will provide at least some different models, since the prize there and the incentives are all to try and keep the population healthy. Now we have to differentiate between keeping the population healthy and not having them use sick care resources. Those are not necessarily the same thing, and that's going to be the challenge for the accountable care organizations, to make sure that they're focused on health and not just reducing utilization and costs of medical care. I don't think it's an easy process. I think one possibility is to do more joint education, to have some of the educational tracks where all health professionals be together so they can see how they can both work together and develop a more common perception of what's important. Thank you all so much, and again, thanks to the three of you.